As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Go, man. Tear it up, dude.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
All right, we're live. A good time to do one because the 49ers and the entire league just found out who's going to the Pro Bowl. The 49ers found out that they have six players going to the Pro Bowl, but there, I think, is a surprising inclusion, and I'm not saying that he's not deserving. That's Talanoa Hufanga. I just didn't expect it because I didn't think he was on top of the fan votes after that those were counted a couple days ago. And there is a shocking exclusion to me, and that's Christian McCaffrey. Again, Christian McCaffrey did not make the Pro Bowl, and we're going to get into it. I think it's a blatant snub just based on his impact on this 49ers team this year, which has been sensational. Plus, he's leading all running backs and those receiving metrics, which is probably the more important part of the game these days. But the six selections, Matt, Nick Bosa, Hufanga, as I mentioned, Kyle Juszczyk, George Kittle, Fred Warner, and Trent Williams. The 49ers also have seven alternates, so McCaffrey is one of those alternates. Center Jake Brendel, kicker Robbie Gold, Ray McCloud as a return specialist, Deebo Samuel, Charvarius Ward, and Mitch Wishnowsky. Now, there's an even worse snub overall, right, not making the alternate list on top of not making the actual Pro Bowl list, and that's Dre Greenlaw. So McCaffrey is at least an alternate, but Dre Greenlaw, who the 49ers had stumped for in previous days, especially Fred Warner, wasn't even one of the 13 49ers selected as even not even selected as an alternate. So that to me is wild. The McCaffrey one was a jaw dropper for me just because we've been sitting here watching a superstar in McCaffrey show up and transform a football team. And the 49ers have been number one across the board in efficiency ever since he showed up and took a full-time role. But obviously the rest of the league, the coaches, players, whatever, did not see it the same way.
Well, yeah, I mean, Deebo Samuel is a, I'm sorry. I said Deebo Samuel, I meant Christian McCaffrey, but that is it easy to confuse them because Deebo Samuel was a Pro Bowler last year. By far and away, their MVP, a guy that they leaned on heavily on offense. But this year, it's been McCaffrey who's sort of replaced him in that regard. And I can only imagine the reason he doesn't make the Pro Bowl is because, obviously, he came in midstream. I actually thought that was going to help him, that he was going to get sort of Panthers votes and 49ers votes. But I think it's three straight weeks that Christian McCaffrey has been the total yards leader for this team. And that's a very Deebo Samuel thing to be, running the ball, catching the ball. And as you noted, we've talked about his sheer gravity. He's the black hole of the offense, the guy that's all the defensive players gravitate toward. And that creates lots of room for other guys. It creates time and an outlet for Brock Purdy and the QBs. But I mean, George Kittle's first TD in Seattle was a perfect example. I mean, half the Seahawks defense was going towards Christian McCaffrey. Nobody was covering Kittle, and he had one of the easiest touchdowns of his career. For the Greenlaw one, I mean, I guess you could say only two inside linebackers make it. Those guys were Fred Warner and DeMario Davis, both absolutely deserving. DeMario Davis leads a very good Saints defense. So maybe we need to sort of ratchet that number up. Two seems too few for the first team, especially when a lot of teams play essentially three inside linebackers.
Yeah, and, you know, with Dre Greenlaw, a lot of his impact, too, you have to be there to feel it, right? I mean, the guy, he's a throwback. He delivers some vicious hits. One of those really, I think, snuffed out all of Seattle's chances in the Thursday night game when he took out Travis Homer, and that created the fumble that Charvarius Ward returned that set up an offensive touchdown for the 49ers. So Greenlaw is an enforcer. Kyle Shanahan has called him Mike Tyson before. He even says that he looks a little bit like Mike Tyson. So I think it's, you know, those types of players, Greenlaw, don't get me wrong, he stands out on the stat sheet. He has 100 tackle season in his name, first time that he's eclipsed the century mark. But the true impact, I think, is felt when you're there. And, you know, Fred Warner has more name recognition than Dre Greenlaw, but Fred Warner has been the first to say this year that Dre Greenlaw is having just as good of a year as me. There are two different types of players, though, right? Fred Warner is he patrols the middle of the field. The coverage in between the hash marks has been superb. Nobody likes to go to that spot of the field against the 49ers because Warner is so good at defending it. The best example was the Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa, who completely shied away from throwing where he usually does. But it's an inexact science. Nobody ever goes out and is complimentary of the Pro Bowl selection process. I've never heard anybody say, oh, wow, what a great system they have to get these players in. People are always critical, sometimes maybe a little too critical, but with Greenlaw, I could see the gray area and the fact that there's only two of those linebackers selected per conference. But with McCaffrey, Matt, I just don't get it. You had Saquon Barkley. Okay, yeah, he's a superstar. But then Tony Pollard and Miles Sanders over, I mean, yeah, good players. But, man, you just said it, the gravitational pull from Christian McCaffrey. I think what we're seeing from him is historic, and maybe the Pro Bowl selection process and the way that positions are viewed is just not up to par yet with how football has evolved, because football has evolved into this passing game, right, where players have to be positionless, skill position weapons to truly have an outsized impact. 49ers have been a bit ahead of that curve in Shanahan's offense, and they have a ton of those guys, as you mentioned, Deebo Samuel, and Christian McCaffrey is the latest one, but we'll probably see him honored in all-pro fashion while not getting the Pro Bowl nod, which is one of the ironic dualities that we've seen over the years. But I think Christian McCaffrey is lined up for just that.
Well, I mean, Barkley, Sanders, and Pollard all have more rushing yards than Christian McCaffrey. Yeah. But I don't have the wherewithal very quickly to kind of add up the all-purpose yards. I'll just talk about Talanoa Hufanga, who that was a surprise to me, because the last count, the last time we got a look at the fan count, the final fan count, he was number two, but he was behind Harrison Smith of the Vikings, who's very popular. He's been to six Pro Bowls, and he was ahead. Hufanga was ahead of Buda Baker. In the end, though, it was Baker and Hufanga who were selected, and Harrison Smith, who was not selected to the first team. So obviously the coaches and the players kind of changed that dynamic a lot. And I think Buda Baker has a lot of respect around the league. You hear that from Kyle Shanahan. You hear that from the 49ers offensive players whenever they play the Cardinals. George Kittle is a big admirer of Buda Baker's. But it kind of shows you that Hufanga is getting sort of similar respect, which is incredible for essentially a first-year player. He's not a rookie, but this is his first long stint of starts. And I didn't think he was going to get it because of lack of name recognition. And because, frankly, Every now and then he still makes some mistakes, but I think what people are seeing is that there's an energy and a playmaking ability that more than compensates for sort of the young player issues that he's still working through, and which, by the way, are probably going to be few and far between moving forward because he's so sharp. But just a tremendous first year for him. I'm so glad he got this. What a great honor. We have to go back, David, to when he was talking to us after he was drafted. Fifth round guy out of USC. And he said that his goal was to become a Pro Bowler, but he said his goal was to become a Pro Bowler on special teams. And so his dream comes true, probably earlier than he thought, and probably not quite in the fashion that he thought. He's a Pro Bowler on defense, which, I don't want to demean special teams, but that's a bigger deal. And so congrats to him. I wonder whether the All-Pro list will be reflective like the Pro Bowl list was.
Well, Hufanga might not have earned special teams Pro Bowler his rookie season, but he delivered one of the biggest special teams plays of the year for the 49ers, recovering a fumble off the block punt. Or I guess it wasn't a fumble, it was a block punt, but it was a loose football in an ice storm at Green Bay with all the pressure on him, and he made it look really, really smooth. So that was huge. And now Tono Funga is a Pro Bowler thanks to his instincts, you know, thanks to that hard work, right? He put in the time with Troy Polamalu. I think that might have helped him get some name recognition too, the fact that he has worked with Polamalu. His style of play, you know, a lot of hair, and that hair is on fire, right? The way that he plays that style of play. It does pop off the screen, I think, especially early in the season before teams were really accounting for Talanoa Hufanga when he was still surprising people. I mean, boy, he would just light people up because he'd be crashing through that line of scrimmage. It was really impressive. And, you know, he does have to clean up some of the stuff in coverage. He has to make sure he's not biting as much on some of these play fakes and some of the shorter pass action so he doesn't get beaten over the top. But, I mean, there's not a single safety in the league that has been immune to being beaten over the top or biting on a fake. It's a matter of minimizing that as your career progresses. So congratulations to Tana Hufanga. He is a Pro Bowler for the first time. And I have looked up the all-purpose yardage, Matt.
Yeah.
And out of running backs, Christian McCaffrey's third in the NFL, but he's first in the NFC. So Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry are on top of the all-purpose yardage list. They both made the Pro Bowl for the AFC, Vegas and Tennessee. McCaffrey, though, so we're looking at the backs who made it for the NFC in comparison to McCaffrey. Saquon Barkley, Tony Pollard, and Miles Sanders, right? McCaffrey has 1,578 all-purpose yards. Saquon Barkley is right behind at 1,464, but still a full 100-plus yards behind McCaffrey. Pollard is way down, about 300 yards shy of Christian McCaffrey at 1,279. And Sanders is about 400 yards shy of Christian McCaffrey at 1,182. So, I mean, I know it's a rudimentary measure, but the advanced statistics love Christian McCaffrey as a receiver as well. And, you know, I think you could just start by looking at all-purpose yardage and you see how many McCaffrey has. And you're like, oh, okay, this guy's an outsized impact. But then it's like just the performance of the offense with McCaffrey in it versus him without it, that to me, you know, I can make the argument, I think, a really credible one, Matt, that McCaffrey is the 49ers MVP. And the 49ers are obviously playing excellent football. This could be a Super Bowl team. So just from that lens, right, the MVP of a potential Super Bowl team doesn't even make the cut for the Pro Bowl, even though his all-purpose yard stats indicate that he fits right in there. That to me makes this a very, very notable omission.
Yeah, I was thinking about MVP today as well. Deebo Samuel was such an obvious pick last year. This year, it's not as obvious. And I think, as I said to begin with, McCaffrey's having the most Deebo-like season of anybody on offense. I think MVP will probably go to defense because that's been so consistently good throughout. And I think the guy that will get it is Nick Bosa. But like I said, it's not a snap decision like it was last year. So that'll be interesting. I mean, that that the fact that McCaffrey, a guy who came in at midseason, could even be considered to be the team's MVP, I think speaks to just the impact, the very fast impact that he's had. And it's Pollard to me kind of jumps out. He's having a great season. Even maybe the Cowboys starter. How does a non-starter make the Pro Bowl? So that'll be sliced and diced on 49ers message boards all week. A couple of comments we have here. Do we notice an East Coast bias to any of these? It is notable that the three running backs who make it are all in the NFC East. That's probably got the most eyeballs on it, given that it's there on the Eastern Seaboard plus Dallas, which is the Cowboys are one of the most popular teams in the league. And then Malik, who often takes part, thank you for being on this, Malik, says that Pro Bowls are nice, but All-Pro is the creme de la creme. And he's absolutely right. The All-Pro list is much more discerning list. It's a group of select voters who really know what they're talking about. So that will be the real kind of litmus test of who makes it. I think we can count on Bosa and Juszczyk and Trent Williams the other guys. Anyone else will be really interesting to dissect when that comes out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think, you know, when we zoom out, this 49ers team, this is what's so intriguing. We're moving forward into the final three games of the regular season. 49ers obviously still jockeying for better seeding because they want to stay at home for as long as possible in the playoffs. And then obviously they have clinched a postseason spot. So we will be seeing some very meaningful January football at Levi Stadium. But you look at the journey ahead for the 49ers. They're the hottest team in the NFL. They obviously have Super Bowl aspirations, and they will be trying to carry this heat wave and approach these Super Bowl aspirations with possibly the most star-stalked lineup in football. You talk about 6 Pro Bowlers, 7 alternates, and that number of 6 doesn't even include somebody like Christian McCaffrey, who is only an alternate. Well, that's saying something, right? That is a lot of talent that we're going to be able to watch here over the next several weeks as the games will just continue to grow in importance. And it starts with Washington on Saturday. And Matt, Washington, these guys can play. Washington is a team that plays defense. I don't think that the offense is all that impressive, but the 49ers have noted that they run the ball and they're committed to running the ball in a similar way to Atlanta. Earlier this year, and the 49ers lost that game to the Falcons. Now, they were decimated by injury during that game. This one is a little bit different. The 49ers are pretty darn near full strength for this game against Washington, plus they have it at home. But it will be interesting to see, you know, these players who either made the Pro Bowl or were snubbed from it take the field on Saturday in another really important game as the 49ers position themselves for a potential run of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, several 49ers have noted this week that Washington leads the league in time of possession. So it's a very old school type of team built on they built their defense a lot like the 49ers. They've really concentrated on the defensive line. I know that when Scott McLuhan was there, he concentrated on building the offensive line. So it's been built in a traditional way, which means that not a lot of bells and whistles at this point. I don't think that their quarterback is, top of the league in any sense, but, he's got guts and he manages the game. And I'm really impressed when I watch them by the running back, Brian Robinson. And, he was out, early in the season because, he was, involved in a shooting in DC and he came back and it was a big story there. And, he runs hard and he's reminiscent of Derrick Henry. He's not as big as Henry, but he's got long legs and sort of has that same style. And late in the season, that takes a toll. And if the 49ers do have a weakness right now defensively, it's that they've lost a lot of their bulk from the inside of that defensive line. No Hassan Ridgeway, Javon Kinlaw, I seriously doubt if he'll be back for for this game. No Kevin Givens. I think Eric Armstead has really given this team a big boost on the inside in the short amount of time that he's been back. But they're still thin there. So, I mean, if you're looking for the ways that the Commanders are going to attack this team, I don't think there's any real question. They're going to try to run the ball and do gap blocking, old school, and send their two big backs up the middle. So I think the 49ers know that's coming. I think that they don't like the way that they played against the Falcons earlier this year. One of those losses, they were nicked up for that game for sure. But that's one where the Falcons really took it to them. And one of the few games that the 49ers lost the time of possession battle. So I'm sure that's a theme this week. Don't let what happened to us in Atlanta happen this week. And momentum has been a big theme as well. They want to keep this going right through week 18.
Yeah, Atlanta basically took what had been the 49ers formula in years prior and used it against them. The 49ers have since become more dynamic offensively, again, thanks to Christian McCaffrey, but they still do try to control possession. And I think Washington actually leads the league in average time of possession this year. It's just all about complementary football, and Washington has had to play complementary football to make up for the fact that their offensive weapons, especially the quarterback, is unremarkable. Carson Wentz was the starter to begin the year. He wasn't any good. Taylor Heinicke is the QB now. I mean, he's an underdog. He went to Old Dominion's, been around the league for a few years. I think he's 29 years old now. Got a shot right a couple of years ago. I still remember him going up against Brady and the Buccaneers when Tampa Bay was on its way to the Super Bowl back in 2020. But you look at all the metrics for Washington pass-wise, they're like number 25, number 26 in the league. So you just look at this. I mean, they do have some talented wideouts, though, right? You got Terry McLaurin over there. Dotson's a good receiver as well. So you can't take them lightly because there is potential explosiveness there. But I just think that the 49ers, obviously, we talk about how loaded this team is with talent. They show up and they play their game defensively, which they've done now for seven straight weeks. There's every indication that this Washington team is really, really going to struggle to move the ball against them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and, they do have a good wide receiver in Terry McLaurin. I remember him in the Senior Bowl back in 2019 when the 49ers were – I think they were – 49ers were coaching the other side, but McLaurin was one of the standouts. The other standout that week was a guy named Debo Samuel. He's probably not back. Yeah, he's pretty good too. He's not going to be back for this game. He is getting close, and it's a real stark contrast. I saw him in the locker room last week. It was that one Tuesday practice, and he was limping around pretty good. And I thought, oh boy, it's going to be a while before Debo Samuel comes back. But I saw him yesterday, zero limp, doing some stuff on the side during practice. So it's looking as if, and Kyle Shanahan even said, if this were last year and the 49ers were, you know, needing every victory to even make the playoffs, there was a really good chance that Debo Samuel could play in this upcoming game. They're not quite in that mode where they can let these guys heal up. But I think Debo Samuel being back for the Raiders game and certainly the Cardinals game to finish out the season is a high possibility. So, that would mean that the 49ers have their full contingent of weaponry going into whatever that first opponent is in the playoffs. And that's going to be really, really interesting to watch.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, let's talk about that, maybe answer a question about that. Danny Y asks, if the 49ers in Minnesota tie at season's end, what is the tiebreaker? Is it division record or conference record? Danny says that he's read both. Well, the answer to his question is conference record, and the 49ers currently have a better NFC record than Minnesota. So assuming the 49ers win out and Minnesota loses once more so that they have even overall records, the 49ers would hold the tiebreaker over the Vikings and grab the number two seed. As things stand right now, the 49ers, as a division winner, are guaranteed nothing lower than their current seed, which is the three seed. That would mean a home wild card game against the sixth seed. If the game were today, if the playoffs started right now, the 49ers would host the New York Giants, who are the sixth seed. Washington is the seventh. So that's also a potential first round matchup that we get to maybe have previewed this weekend, right? 49ers and Washington, who's seven. But there's other teams that are knocking on the door, Matt, of this playoff picture. You look at the Detroit Lions, who are surging, playing really well. I think they're a better team than Washington or the New York Giants. I think they're the nine seed right now. The top seven get in. The Seahawks are technically the eight. We just saw the Seahawks in Seattle on Thursday. And then the Green Bay Packers, don't count them out just yet, because especially if the 49ers beat Washington on Saturday, as we expect, Matt, that will knock Washington out of the current playoff picture, right? And that means that another team will slot into number seven, and it will open up hope for a whole bunch of teams, including the Packers, including the Lions, including the Seahawks, who are all, you know, chomping at the bit to get that final playoff spot. And if the 49ers do catch the Vikings, then they'll end up playing the team that gets the final playoff spot, because the two is going to play the seven. So it's this funny situation here where the Washington Commanders are going to be trying to play the 49ers for maybe a chance to play the 49ers, if that makes sense, in the playoffs. But the first round is coming on Saturday at Levi Stadium.
Yeah, it would be a chance to return to Levi Stadium, and maybe if they eked out a win to do it again. But the team that you noted there that I would want to avoid if I'm the 49ers, and the 49ers will never admit to wanting to play one team over another, but is the Lions, just because Dan Campbell is definitely building a culture there. It's a tough-minded culture, and they're hot. And that's something that the 49ers learned last year, that going in with momentum is a big deal. And I think that's very much why Kyle Shanahan is gunning for this number two seed. Maybe the difference between the number two and number three seed isn't all that vast, but I think the more important aspect is that you're still rolling at the end of the season. And teams that kind of take their foot off the accelerator, remember last year the Packers had the best record in football. What did they do going into the final week? Well, they rested Aaron Rodgers and lots of other starters, and they lost the finale to the Lions. And, you know, no big deal. They still had the number one seed. They still had the bye. But it meant that when the season restarted 2 weeks later, they might not have been as sharp as they were. And, we both know the team that rolled in there and kicked them out of the playoffs. It was the 49ers. That's something that Kyle Shanahan is going to be very, very cognizant of and trying to guard against. And I know that going into that finale against the Cardinals, there's going to be lots of questions about, this is a great time to rest Christian McCaffrey. Hey, maybe give Nick Bosa the game off. Give Eric Armstead the game off. I doubt that Shanahan will entertain that, at least not until kind of deep into the game. We're talking late third quarter, maybe fourth quarter. That's my instinct on it. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. I think the number two seed is extremely important because number two doesn't get you the bye anymore, but it gets you a second home game in the playoffs. So, I mean, if everything plays according to seeding and the Vikings and the 49ers, right, they're 2-3, that whoever is two and whoever is three gets the home game in the divisional round. Either it's a matter of having the Vikings come to Levi's or going to Minnesota. And that's assuming that there are no upsets, and there could be, because I don't think the Vikings are that great of a team, even though they've obviously won a lot of games. But I think that holding on to those home games is extremely important. I asked George Kittle about it today in the locker room, and he said, yeah, the last time we had two playoff home games, things ended up pretty good. The 49ers were in the Super Bowl because they just waltzed through the Vikings and then the Packers in the 2019 playoffs, January 2020, to make it to Miami. So especially for a team that last year had to play 12 road games, that was an NFL record, including four straight elimination games on the road at the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. That was the Rams in week 18, then to Dallas, then to Green Bay in the ice storm, then back to L.A. For a team that was just so beaten up by that tough road last year, I mean, I've heard stories. The 49ers injury situation in those games goes way, way beyond, I think what's publicly known. Those guys were just hurting by the end of that run. And, you know, playing on the road three times in L.A. and then in Dallas and then in Green Bay and finishing that up with an ice storm game and then turning around and having to play in L.A. another road game for the NFC Championship. I mean, I think that caught up to the 49ers. So right now the goal for this team should be to clear the path for a Super Bowl run. Because if you don't clear the path, then a lot more wrenches can get in your way. And even if you feel that you have the best roster and you're really well set up with your football team to take on whatever challenges might come, you're still lowering your probability. So in my opinion, 49ers should be raising their probability. And we should be pivoting to the question because, Matt, we have our first audio question in a while. This is good. Colin, what's going on?
How are you guys?
Hey, Colin.
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you. My question was on, you know, kind of more of Shanahan and Coach of the Year. Obviously, I'm getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but there's still games to be played. But I just feel like everyone's talking about Sirianni, and rightfully so. And I'm trying to remember a coach of the year who didn't just have the best record, but won coach of the year. And I think maybe it was like Bruce Arians when he kind of stepped in for Chuck Pagano all of those years back ago for the Colts. But I just feel like with Shanahan, you know, building an offense for Lance all offseason, Lance goes down week two, right? Jimmy G says goodbye to you guys in February, right? And goodbye to us as the faithful. in February, right? It was a foregone conclusion he was gone. So Shanahan builds this offense for Lance. Lance gets hurt week two. Jimmy comes in. They really don't miss a beat from an offensive standpoint. You know, they had some weapons hurt in those games you were talking about earlier with Atlanta, et cetera. And then now Purdy comes in, and they've even looked better than they did with Jimmy G, and they've won 7 in a row, and obviously the McCaffrey trade is a huge piece of that. And just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on, you know, Coach of the Year aspect. Is that ever held in from a national voter standpoint of, hey, look what this coach had to overcome, or is it just best record, best team?
Yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, and I really think that this last game in Seattle was just an exquisite game. Just given all the circumstances that the 49ers were facing, I felt it was Shanahan's best game as a play caller. I'm skeptical whether he could do it just from everything you just said. Sirianni's going to have the best record. We already talked about sort of the East Coast bias there. He's been getting lots of pub all year, and other guys getting lots of pub, and deservedly so is Mike McDaniel in Miami for what he's been able to do with the Dolphins. He needs to be in the conversation at the very least. And I hope that he is. Interesting that you bring that up, because all I see on Twitter is Shanahan's trash and he should probably be fired at some point. But this would go counter to the Shanahan is garbage argument. David, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a hell of a coaching job this year from Kyle Shanahan, just because the way that he's delegated responsibility for that quarterback room, which might have initially been just something that he did to make sure that the 49ers developed Trey Lance as well as possible. But it has now benefited three different starting quarterbacks for the 49ers. I mean, think of what Shanahan did this offseason. He brought in Brian Griese, first-time quarterbacks coach, to handle a lot of the nuts and bolts of that job. But Clay Kubiak is also in that room as the assistant quarterbacks coach. Bobby Slowick, the pass game coordinator, is in the room. Shanahan brought in Anthony Lynn, a pedigreed head coach who's a run game specialist, but you have to believe that he's also helping out the QBs, at least through coaching up the running backs to be good receivers for the quarterbacks, because everything has to work in cohesion for the offense. Brian Fleury, the 49ers tight ends coach, is a former QB. I mean, he throws passes with the quarterbacks during warmups, and he's, you know, The way that Fleury coaches offense and coaches tight ends is done in a manner so that it benefits the quarterback. We're talking about route depth and, you know, where exactly the break is happening and angles. Anyway, my main point is that I think Shanahan has built a great, great staff to – I think Shanahan has built a great, great staff to absorb the particular challenges that the 49ers have faced this year, with the most – prominent challenge that the 49ers have faced being quarterback health, right? They've had to go from Lance to Garoppolo and now to Brock Purdy. And I think that would sink almost any other team that's ever played football in the history of the NFL, right? You don't just go to your third quarterback and be fine. I think one of the exceptions might have been the 1991 49ers, but they didn't make the playoffs, but I mean, they did get to their third guy, Steve Bono, and they ripped off a ton of wins. This 49ers team is on a whole different stratosphere. They're still fighting for a high playoff seeding. They already have the divisional title, and they're on their third quarterback. So I think a lot of that goes back to the infrastructure coaching-wise that Kyle Shanahan built, delegated, whatever you want to say, in that quarterback room. And he ultimately should get credit for that, because he insulated this team for just some of the crazy occurrences that have happened this year. And now the results definitely speak for themselves.
There's also cohesion with the front office. I mean, the McCaffrey trade is looking like a genius move, and they edged out their number one competition, the Rams, to get that. So, another sort of false narrative out there. Remember how we read that Shanahan and Lynch, those two guys just weren't getting along. That was one of the worst things that's been reported. These guys get along as well as any GM head coaching duo. And Lynch really kind of brought in an excellent, excellent piece for the 49ers this year. And then you can also, you know, throw in the Brock Purdy draft pick. I don't know. We still haven't figured out who exactly is responsible for that. A lot of times it's the QB's coach that really kind of takes ownership of later round or undrafted guys. Rich Scangarello and Nick Mullins back in 2018, that comes to mind. Bringing in Brock Purdy looks to be a very, very smart move for this team right now. So nice cohesion between coaching staff and front office.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, we talked about the 49ers' success drafting in the later rounds, and this has been a theme throughout several years, and Purdy is added on to that list, right, as Mr. Irrelevant himself, number 262. I mean, the 49ers, it's very clear that the scouting department, the way that they are able to scour college football for talent that's not just talent, but talent that fits exactly what the 49ers want to do is impressive. And in the case of Brock Purdy, I've talked about this a lot. Purdy, to me, this is one of the – let me step back for a second. Speaking of terrible narratives, somebody went out this week and was like, oh, yeah, I see the Purdy comp as Taylor Heineke. And it's like, to me, that's insulting to Brock Purdy, because I like to give players the benefit of the doubt. Like, if Purdy is – he has the top passer rating in football here over the past 3 weeks. Taylor Heineke is like a number 25 guy, right? So, yeah, maybe Brock Purdy is going to regress, but until he regresses, you know, I'm going to look at him as a player with a lot of potential. And to say that he, you know, some kind of bottom barrel quarterback when obviously he hasn't been a bottom barrel quarterback, to me, that doesn't add up. But anyway, the reason why I think Purdy is in this spot of success so quickly is because his skill set matches exactly what the 49ers have needed for ready-made success. And if you want to toss out a fair comp for Brock Purdy, I know a lot of people don't want to say this for some reason, but it's Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that he's got the release. He's a gunslinger at short range, right? He's that rare kind of QB that loves to fire the ball over the middle into tight windows, and that's perfect for setting up yards after the catch in the system. And on top of that, he's faster than Jimmy Garoppolo, so he probably has more upside. Downside probably more right now too, because he's a rookie, right? So he's still figuring stuff out. But so many of the skills that made Jimmy Garoppolo efficient within Shanahan's offense that's been built for yards after the catch, Purdy was able to take and run with right away. In that Miami game, he started beating all those zero blitzes with a quick release, and we were like, ooh, that looks like Jimmy Garoppolo. And he's also shown us that he's got an insanely quick 10-yard burst, so he can escape that pocket more effectively than Garoppolo did. And, you know, you just look at that set of skills and you say, hey, the 49ers picked this guy in the seventh round. That scouting department really scoured college football and they found a QB that they, you know, it wasn't easy to get a guy. It wasn't going to be easy to find a guy that would make this 53-man roster, right, because they were so loaded. But they found that needle in a haystack in Brock Purdy that was good enough to make the 53-man roster. And because of that, he was thrust into playing action. I mean, to make this 53, he had to have been good enough to immediately play. And Brock Purdy has immediately played, and it's paid off for the 49ers that they, you know, found exactly the puzzle piece that their roster needed entering this season.
Yeah, and that's going to be what this front office has to do in coming years. They don't have any high picks, so they need to kind of find puzzle pieces from the end of the third round and later. And maybe they can cobble together some of those picks and move a little higher, but that's going to be their MO is, you know, there could be a lot of guys hitting free agency. So there's going to be some spots to fill, and it'll be exactly what you just described. Very kind of specific targeted scouting being done. It'll be interesting. It's a different kind of draft than certainly what Shanahan and Lynch did in the first 3 years they were there. Andy P has a good question. He says, have you guys seen, heard anything about Kalia Davis? I didn't expect we'd see him this season, so I'm very excited to see what impact he can have on the D line. And just to get everybody up to speed, the 49ers not only opened the practice window this week for Javon Kinlaw, they did the same for Kalia Davis, another defensive tackle, sixth rounder this year, tore his ACL at Central Florida last year. And it surprised me, too. I wasn't expecting to hear his name. My sense, David, is that they're not ready to play him this season. That's not the priority right now. I think that they're probably have that as an option if something happens with Kinlaw or they have a spate of other injuries. Very smart to kind of get him into practice because he's somebody that they're going to have to lean on next year. I mentioned all the free agents that are coming up. Most of those guys, a lot of those guys are along the defensive line. So I think Kalia Davis figures prominently into the offseason mix for sure. And getting him this little spate of practices, this little boost right now, kind of sends him into the offseason in a very positive way.
Well, you know, it's a no-lose maneuver from the 49ers, right? Because Kalia Davis is not on IR. He's on NFI, which means non-football injury. That just means that he got hurt outside the NFL. So he tore his ACL in football, but not in the NFL. So he's put on this NFI list. And just like the IR list, the return from NFI comes with a practice designation to where you can practice for up to 3 weeks without being officially activated. So I think what the 49ers did is they said, hey, we have 3 weeks right now until the end of the season. He's healthy enough to practice, so why not have him practice? Why not take advantage of this three-week window? And you open it right now just in case you get eliminated in the wild card round. I don't think the 49ers expect to, but smarter to open the window now than in 2 weeks and then get upset in the first round and then on insult on top of injury, right? Kalia Davis only gets 1 week of practice. So you want to maximize his practice time. That being said, if he blows them out of the water with how he practices and the kind of shape he gets into over the next week or two, the 49ers can afford to activate Kalia Davis because he was on NFI before the season started. So he would not count as one of those return to play designations, of which the 49ers only have eight. They only have two left, right? And the favorites to grab the last two are Javon Kinlaw and Elijah Mitchell. So all of a sudden, Kalia Davis shows up and everybody's like, well, is he going to count one of the designations? Is he going to kick Kinlaw off, Mitchell off? Well, what's going on? And no, that won't be the case. The 49ers are playing with house money here in that in the unlikely event that Kalia Davis totally blows them away, they will have an ability to get him onto the roster without much downside.
Let's talk about some of these Pro Bowl alternates. Jake Brendel, I mean, right off the bat. Remember a few months ago, Brendel was a big question mark. Hadn't really played much at all. He, along with Spencer Burford and Aaron Banks, were part of this sort of neophyte offensive line. And all of a sudden, he's a Pro Bowl alternate in his first season. Congratulations to him on that. My mind spins ahead to free agency, and he's only signed for this season. So he's somebody that the 49ers, I'm sure, want to bring back for future years. But, you know, given the number of teams that now run this Shanahan offense, including Mike McDaniel, I thought that's been a big sort of missing element for the Dolphins. They could really use a top-tier center. I just wonder whether Jake Brendel is going to end up costing a lot more than the 49ers were banking on, and probably being a Pro Bowl alternate kind of ratchets up that price a little bit more. So he's interesting. And then Charvarius Ward, I thought, if we're looking at snubs, that's another possible snub. I just think he's been fantastic. He gets recognition here as an alternate. He's never been to the Pro Bowl before. I wonder whether his season was deserving of being a first-team Pro Bowler. What do you think, David?
Well, he's the most physical cornerback in football. He hasn't missed a single tackle. He is the best run-defending corner in football. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, that's not really the job description. It absolutely is the job description, especially in the 49ers scheme. If you can't do what Charvarius Ward does so effectively, the entire defense breaks. Because they put a lot of pressure on that outside cornerback to take away perimeter runs. And if that corner is a bad tackler, then you don't even get the chance to cover because teams are just going to beat you around the edge. So Charvarius Ward, you know, cracking down, making those stops, not having a missed tackle all season, I think that in and of itself should have thrust him right into the middle of the conversation. And then the coverage numbers are actually really, really good. He had one bad game against the Chiefs. And I think that, you know, if you gave him some truth serum, he might say that he regrets playing because he didn't practice all week. And I think it was a pride thing. I don't think he wanted to miss a game against his former team, right, with Kansas City coming in. But I think it was very apparent that Charvarius Ward was not Charvarius Ward during that game against Kansas City. That's a larger discussion to have about aberrations in this 49ers defense, because they obviously want to prove that Kansas City debacle was an aberration. But for Ward in particular, I think that it was clear that, you know, that one blemish on his track record this year is something that you wouldn't expect him to replicate if he's healthy moving forward. And some of the NFL Next Gen stats, you know, tracking scores, which are really interesting. Even before this season, they had Charvarius Ward as one of the truly elite corners in the game. But he wasn't recognized for that with Kansas City, maybe because he was in the shadow of Mahomes and that offense, right? Here with the 49ers, maybe we'll take a Super Bowl win where Charvarius Ward has a big interception or a big pass breakup in the Super Bowl for him to be on that map. But I'll tell you what, every single metric, Matt, says that this guy belongs, whether it be pass defense or run defense, where he literally is number one out of all cornerbacks. It definitely says that he belongs.
Yeah, and he had a prominent game.
You want to go to another question?
Game against DK Metcalf the other night on national television. Unfortunately, the voting was done by then. So you're right. I think the more prominent games that he has, the better for him. Just to finish up on these alternates, Mitch Wichnowsky was another one. I think that he has really benefited from not having to do kickoffs. I think kickoffs are just not his thing. It's not anything he ever did a lot in college. He's not a big leg guy. I just think that last year he just seemed really run down. He was a new father. He was struggling with kickoffs, and I think that affected his punting. He's just doing punting now. And he's acing it, leads the league in the percentage of punts inside the 20. And then Deebo Samuel, McCaffrey, we talked about, Robbie Gould having a solid season. And then Ray-Ray McCloud, good for Ray-Ray. I think he's, third in punt return average. The thing that stands out about him to me is that he always makes that first tackler miss. I mean, these aren't always gigantic returns from him. But he's got real guts, and the first move is good. He just doesn't have really, long speed, crazy breakaway speed. We knew that going in. But it just sort of underscores what's been a very solid season for him and, much better return game overall. I mean, that's something that the 49ers have been just duds in. The first 4 or 5 years of Kyle Shanahan, that's improved this season.
Yeah, and that's improved throughout the course of this season as well. Number one offense, number one defense, number seven special teams DVOA for the 49ers ever since they beat the Rams with the Christian McCaffrey trifecta. They've gone 7-0 over that stretch. So special teams has really turned it up. All right, what do you think is going to happen this weekend? I'm not going to even pretend to make this dramatic. I think the 49ers are going to blow them out. Well, one big reason why I think so is the 49ers, they now have the benefit of the schedule. A, they're not traveling for this game. Washington's coming cross country on a short week. They played the Sunday night game. They've got to play a Saturday afternoon game on the West Coast. And the 49ers are coming off essentially a half bye, right? So you've got superior roster with rest against a inferior roster on short rest, traveling on the road. I think this is going to be a 20-point game. I really do. I predicted one blowout earlier this year. I was right. And I predicted another one and it was like a 2-point game. So, but I'm feeling that I'm going to be right on this one. I just don't think this lines up well for Washington at all against the 49ers defense. What do you think?
I agree with your superior roster theory, and I think it's probably going to be the case the rest of the season for the 49ers. I think it'll be tighter though, because if I'm the 49ers, I want my opponent to have won the previous week, just like the Buccaneers did, the Seahawks did. But Washington got a loss, and they got ripped off kind of some bad calls by the referees. I think that they're going to be upset, and they're fighting for a playoff spot. So. I think they're going to be very much like Atlanta. I think that's a great comparison. I think the 49ers win this game, but I think it'll be a dogfight. I think that the 49ers run defense is really going to have to show up. This is going to be a lunch pail game, and it'll be a great opportunity to sort of prove to one another that we are going to kind of roll through these last three weeks and go into the season with momentum. But I think that the Commanders are going to make them work for it.
All right. Well, if you say so. Didn't you grow up watching this Washington team, Matt? You grew up in that area.
Not this Washington team.
Not this.
No, yeah, I grew up a diehard Redskins fan back in the day. But my crew, the guys that I grew up with that still live out there, were just as diehard as me. They've all fallen off the wagon because of bad teams and a bad culture there. So I think a lot of fans are hoping that there's a change at the very top of that organization, because if there is and they start winning, that's an area that just really, really is a lot like the Bay Area. That really loves its team, and I think that they would kind of reclaim their spot as one of the more beloved and one of the more lucrative franchises, which they are no longer within the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the late 80s, early 90s, they had some really, really good teams under Joe Gibbs and great DB play, right, in Washington. I mean, those were tough football teams. So, and this is a tough team, too. These guys come and they play complementary football. They play defense. I just can't look at that offense seriously with that quarterback and the pass protection issues they had against the Giants last week. And can't look at that and say that they're going to come travel across country on short rest and somehow do better against a 49ers team that's just been really on a rampage here for 7 weeks. So, you know, the NFL's weird, though. Sometimes trends reverse, and maybe it will in this game, but the 49ers obviously still gunning for that number two seed. All right, everybody, thanks for joining. This is awesome. Next time, maybe we'll get a few more audio questions. We answered both of you guys that got up on stage, so we'll try to do a few more of these and maybe up the frequency here as this season gets really fun. It's going to be a hell of a December and January because the football is about to get really, really intense if it hasn't already. For Matt Barrows, this is David Lombardi. We'll talk to everybody next time on Here's the Catch.